It's a great honor for me to introduce our next speaker. He's Professor Edward Said, PAR Professor of English and Comparative Literature at Columbia University, distinguished scholar and literary critic, author of a path-breaking book, Orientalism, and his most recent books are The Question of Palestine, which should be in each person's library in this room, and Covering Islam. Professor Said's writings on the question of Palestine has intimidated the Zionist establishment in this country so much that even Commentary magazine had to write an open letter addressed to Professor Said. Lastly, and I think more importantly, Professor Said is a member of the Palestine National Council, the Palestinian Parliament in exile. Before I turn the microphone over to him, perhaps let me use his words in an article he wrote for the Manchester Guardian before the invasion sometime in March or April of this year. And he wrote, "The mechanical conquests of Israel, the crippling paradoxes of Arab society, the rhetoric of the international scene, all these enlarge the gap between what is and what is acceptable. Hemmed in on all sides, the Palestinian struggle holds on to humane and ecumenical goals hidden beneath much surface confusion. If at this moment this deep struggle is only an irony, its progress towards the center of things is irresistible. With what human cost in increased violence and counter-violence, it is wise for all to ponder." Please welcome Professor Edward Said.
Thank you very much. I'm very moved to be here today because it seems to me, as Dick Falk has just said, we may be at a moment that will change things in this country, as we are obviously at a moment in the Middle East when things are being changed. And so I would like to talk to you about the idea of Palestine with a full awareness that the notion of an idea at a time when 120,000 Israeli troops and 1,000 tanks and hundreds of US-made planes besiege and attack and bomb refugee camps, and the remnant of the refugee people of Palestine who are now in Lebanon, it may seem like the greatest kind of inappropriateness to talk about an idea. But I'm going to talk about an idea that holds on despite a war that is costing Israel $100 million a day and huge casualties, about which a kind of obscene struggle is going on in the US press as to how many people were really killed, in which Israeli and Zionist apologists never say that it is the policy of the Israeli military to count as casualties only Lebanese civilians and not Palestinians, because, as Mr. Begin said at the Knesset on June the 8th, the Palestinians are simply two-legged beasts. So, in such a context, it may seem wrong to talk about an idea, but I want to do it anyway, because I think we have to understand that this enormous Israeli and US effort to obliterate the Palestinians, because this is what the war in Lebanon is about the obliteration of an idea, and not, as the Israelis and their supporters say, a struggle for civilization, a civilization that puts hooded men in cars, as they did in Chile in 1973 after the coup, to identify Palestinians and send them off to concentration camps, never to be heard from again. This civilization that the struggle that Israel is waging for is up against an idea of Palestine, which I want to talk about today as embodied in three very concrete ways by the Palestinian people and their many Arab and non-Arab allies the world over. In the first place, the idea of Palestine embodied in the lives and struggle of the Palestinians represents, first of all, the authenticity, the real, undeniable reality of the resistance of the native inhabitants of Palestine to an invading movement that dispossessed them, displaced them, and now seeks to destroy them physically as well as morally. Second, the idea of Palestine is the last remaining idea of Arabism. That is to say, at a moment when we see the Arab regimes going on about the national struggle and this moment of gloom and all the rest of it, the one idea that still galvanizes the Arab people who are oppressed by regimes that are unpopular, alienated, and deeply afraid, paradoxically tied to the United States in the ways that Dick Falk mentioned, the one idea that remains of the Arab national struggle is the idea of Palestine. And I must add that it remains not because people talk well or get up in places like this and say the idea of Palestine, but because people are fighting for the idea in a place and with full conviction that what they're doing is right. The third aspect of the idea of Palestine that is of crucial importance now is that the idea of Palestine is the wedge that opens up the discrepancy between the claims of Israel to be a democracy, to be an outpost of Western civilization, to be a moral force in the world, to be the place where the Jewish problem is going to be resolved once and for all by Jews for Jews, on the one hand, and on the other hand, everything that goes against this, the dispossession of the Palestinians by Israel, the association worldwide by Israel with every single reactionary oppressive regime in the Third World, South Africa, Salvador, Chile, Peru, Guatemala, Haiti. And it is the idea of Palestine that makes it impossible on the ground and in the world for the Israelis to say that their state and what they're doing are about morality and civilization. Let me go back over these now in a little more detail. The essence of the Israeli policy towards the Palestinian is that the Palestinian is a non-Jew and therefore is not entitled to the same rights and privileges that a Jew is inside Palestine. This has been the very beginning, this was there at the very beginning of the Zionist conquest of Palestine early in this century, and it has continued. And with it has always gone, even in the writings and in the thought of the people whom I respect and have read, Martin Buber, Hannah Arendt, Judah Magnus, one always finds there people who, like those three I mentioned, who opposed and were unhappy about on occasion, unhappy about what Zionism was about, and yet did not have, as very few Israelis today have, a sense of the humanity of the Palestinian who was there. For them, for Jews in general in Palestine, the Palestinian was a kind of an obstacle, a nuisance, that could simply be ignored for a while, and then, as we see now tragically, he and she had to be exterminated thereafter. The war in Lebanon, as has been said many times, is an extension of the continuing attack upon the existence of a Palestinian national identity and a Palestinian national idea, which is now in the hands, this war is now in the hands of an Orientalist, Professor Menachem Mielson, the civilian governor of the West Bank and Gaza, who, along with General Sharon and Begin, is now chasing the Palestinians into any place that they might be found. And they have, and one of the great ironies that needs to be repeated about the present campaign is that all through the last year, all the major figures on the Israeli scene have been saying that it's simply a matter of time. We're going to do it, because the logic of Israel vis-a-vis the Palestinian has never changed. It has always been a logic of getting the Palestinian out, and insofar as the Palestinian still remains and still fights back, as the Palestinian has always done, it then becomes necessary to kill the Palestinian. It's as simple as that. Either first you dehumanize them, you say they are two-legged beasts, you say they're not there, you'd call them terrorists, and then you proceed to eliminate them. Now, I must mention that when Mielson, as recently as yesterday, was saying that the point of a campaign in Lebanon is to destroy the PLO, and the point of that is to make it possible for us to rule the West Bank and Gaza, which, you remember, Begin always says, is not annexed territory. He says, how can you annex territory that's already yours? Again, there's nobody there. They're just odd people. They're only Palestinian two-legged beasts. The idea is to destroy the PLO in order to complete the annexation, colonization, pacification of the West Bank. Yet, very little noticed in the American press, on June the 20th, 24 Palestinian mayors in Gaza and the West Bank signed a declaration that they opposed the Israeli campaign in Lebanon and still considered and would always consider the PLO as the sole legitimate representative of the Palestinian people. And the point is that the Israelis have not been able, the Israelis and their supporters have not been able to understand that what they are up against is not simply a people. A people can be perhaps exterminated, but they are up against a people with an idea and a cause. And the cause will continue, because so long as one Palestinian lives, and this is almost a cliche, but it needs to be said, so long as one Palestinian lives, the idea of Palestine will go on. And it's an idea not about... I think it's very important also to say that it's not an idea simply about land. It is, of course, about land. It's about the right of people to their homeland, to national self-determination. But it's also, and it's perhaps confused, and I've been critical of the way we have specified our goals, and sometimes others have said, and I've said too, that our political program is unclear. We seem to say one thing one day and another day. Well, it's a democratic process, and I think the important thing is that for all its bumbling, for all its confusion, for all the difficulty in expressing our ideas in an environment, both in the Arab world and elsewhere, that is totally, almost totally hostile for some of the reasons that Dick Fault specified. In spite of that, the idea has come through. And what is it an idea about? It's an idea not about exclusion. It's an idea about living in a community. And this is the one thing that Zionism, so far as non-Jews have been concerned, cannot take in. And it's been hard for us, because as far as we are concerned, the Jews who came to Palestine have come as aliens, as invaders, and yet, the idea of the secular, democratic, national state in Palestine is an idea about living in a human community of equality and of parity before the law. The idea of a homeland on a part of partitioned Palestine is also an idea about living together. And yet, what has been the traditional, the political, the official response of the Zionism? Always no. we're not interested in this, we're not interested in that. In fact, we don't want you around. That is the basic bottom line of Israeli policy. And the Palestinian position has always been, the idea of Palestine, it's an idea about living humanly together in a part of the world that is saturated with blood, and for which our people and people who have been allied with us have paid very, very heavily. And yet, as I say, the idea goes on. The second is that Palestine, the idea of Palestine, is the last remaining idea of Arabism and Arab nationalism, authentic idea of Arab nationalism in the Arab world. I would like to mention to you something that is not commonly known, that in the 30s, in 1936 to be exact, during the period of the great general strike in Palestine, it was a group of Gulf Arabs, not the rulers, but a group of citizens, members of Islamic and Arab associations in Kuwait and elsewhere in the Gulf, who put pressure on the rulers of the Gulf to gather together money to send to Palestine in support of the great general strike of the Palestinians. And this pattern has continued. Whereas every Arab regime declares itself for Palestinian struggle and so on and so forth, the reason they do this is that in the eyes of their own people, given that they are, for the most part, regimes that are unpopular, alienated, minority regimes, who are deeply complicit with the United States and indirectly, and in some cases directly with Israel, the one thing that they have always had recourse to is the idea of Palestine. Why? Because their people, almost to the last man and woman, are in support of the Palestinian idea, not only because they admire and feel sympathy with the struggle of the Palestinians, but also because, and this is terribly important to understand, Israeli designs on the Middle East, given, for example, General Sharon's declaration on December the 14th of last year, that the entire Middle East is now within Israeli part of Israeli security interests. And he, as he told the American State Department in May of this year, that what he presented to them was a model, a plan for an Israeli West Bank and Gaza, a Christian Lebanon, and a Palestinian Jordan. That the idea is that what is coming now, given a long history of intervention by Israel and the Zionist movement in the Arab world, is the complete domination, the complete restructuring of the Middle East into spheres of influence dominated at the top by Israel. So that in the future, we must expect attacks on Syria and Jordan. We must continue to expect Israeli pressure on the Gulf. And as Sharon said, Israeli security interests now extend to Pakistan, Iran, Turkey, all of North Africa, Ethiopia, and Zimbabwe. So what we are dealing with now is a superpower, a regional superpower, that will complete and continue to go forward with plans for the region that have always been within the Zionist view of the Middle East. Remember, for example, the Lavon Affair in 1954 in Egypt, the stimulation of riots in Iraq in the 30s. Most recently, it's not about the Palestinians. What about, people don't remember this, what about the attack on Lebanon, on the destruction of the entire civil air force of Lebanon in 1968 by Israeli commandos? And so when you hear this Israeli rhetoric about, well, the Arabs have always been killing themselves and killing each other, and what we're doing is simply restoring some peace and order to the region, you have to remember that it's a peace and order that Israel wants to control, so that the continued pattern of intervention in the lives of every Arab citizen and people beyond the Arab world, in the Islamic and African world, is continuing. And this step in Lebanon is but one of a series planned and presumably to be executed by the Israelis. And it's against this that the stand of the Palestinians in Lebanon, 10,000 men, lightly armed with 100 ancient tanks, against a force that I just described, over 120,000 men. And remember that in 1967, 500,000 Arabs, soldiers, with 3,000 tanks and 900 airplanes, resisted exactly 6 days. And now 10,000 irregulars have held off the Israeli army for 7 weeks. Now, I want to say also one more thing, that as Dick Falk mentioned, the attempt to portray the Palestinians as essentially a bunch of brigands and terrorists and Soviet agents is completely belied both here and in the Arab world, and especially in the Arab world, by the fact that, as my friend Lias Khoury has said, that the only Arab leader who can stand up in the streets and walk amongst his people, who is a people that is armed and is not afraid to do so, not surrounded by 800 bodyguards and 10 tanks, is Yasser Arafat. So in the Arab context, therefore, to conclude, in the Arab context, the Arab-Palestinian struggle is an idea around which people fight, their leadership is forced perhaps to fight in the front line, as against all the other Arab leaders who talk, who wheel and deal, and who have shown themselves to be incompetent, as Iqbal Ahmed says, contact men, contractors, and country sellers. Whereas the Palestinians are standing in the front line as against the whole Israeli and American establishment fighting for the last remaining idea of the Arab national struggle to achieve independence and freedom. Now, the third point I want to make about the idea of Palestine is, as I said, that the Palestinian struggle and the idea of Palestine, as it's taken on this enormous international dimension now, it has become, in fact, the focal point, the most difficult, the most crucial point in the struggle in the world today. I don't think I'm exaggerating. It's enormously difficult because of the nature of our enemy. And I don't for a second want to minimize at all the terrible history of anti-Semitism, which is there, and we must acknowledge it, behind, in the case of most Jews and Israelis, behind them as a kind of specter haunting them. And I don't think we can minimize or underestimate this. And hence, it makes our struggle against this movement, insofar as what it does to us is inhuman and unjust, it makes it a profoundly difficult struggle. And yet, it is a struggle that has achieved internationally the kind of legitimacy which in the United States you simply don't feel. The only countries in the world where you feel the kind of hostility to the Palestinian idea that we now feel in America, of course, are Israel and South Africa. And that's not an insignificant fact, but it's true. Whereas in the world, as I say, the idea of Palestine has become a wedge, opening up a whole can of worms. And the can of worms is about the myths and the illusions and the fictions that Israel is about democracy for everyone, that it's a progressive, Western, civilized state, whereas what has gone on the West Bank, the killings and the beatings that we see on television, and yet most people in America don't understand what that's about because we've been so dehumanized, they don't know the history of what's happening, yet it is beginning to open up that set of contradictions that I think in the next 2 to 3 years, Israel and its supporters will find it impossible to sustain. And here, I must mention that hitherto, in this country, it has been, I find it terribly hard to say, in the presence of people like Dick Falk, in the presence of people like Alex Ehrlich, and others in this country, Izzy Stone, Noam Chomsky, progressive, courageous, lonely voices, Jews who have stood up against this harangue, the tremendous kinds of social and other intellectual and political pressures, to stand up against the machine of the Zionists and to talk about justice and revolutionary struggle. But except for those people, it has been a scandal the likes of which and the scale of which simply boggles the mind, that progressives, for example, like Tom Hayden, no, we're responsible for Tom Hayden. That man, with Ms. Fonda, who has the It's important because he's counted against us. He's a progressive. He's the author of the Port Huron Statement, the founder of SDS, etc. And what is he doing now? But what he's doing now is not unlike what a lot of other people who consider them progressives, consider themselves progressives, who would rather not talk about Israel, who will talk about anything under the sun on the right side, but not about Israel. So as they see Israeli tanks going through Sidon and Tyre, as they see that report in the Times yesterday by Dr. Cahill, who talked about the amputated limbs in the Near East School of Theology in Beirut there, the uncounted hundreds of innocent, defenseless women and children, and men too, who are being killed by the Israelis in Beirut and in the rest of Lebanon, what do they talk about? They go on about an anti-nuclear world. They say nothing about the fact that the only regional power with any credible nuclear option is Israel. Not a word is said about that. Or, as Nat Hentoff said in his extraordinarily... No, it was a very important article he wrote on crimes of silence. When people demonstrate, as they should, against what is being done in Salvador or in the rest of Central and Latin America, not a word is said about the fact that most of those regimes are supported, trained, and maintained by Israel. No, everything is said about the terrible injustices of the juntas, and yet the same progressives who support the just struggle of the Salvadorians and the Nicaraguans and so on say not a word about the role of Israel. Cowardice and infamy, in my opinion. Similarly, now, one last point. Same thing. All the demonstrations in this very hall here, when there was a great evening in support of solidarity, artists and writers and workers in support of solidarity. Again, nothing was said about the military regime, far more brutal than Jaruzelski's regime in Poland. Nothing was said about the Israeli regime on the West Bank and Gaza, where people were being killed, and it was a regime that had been in effect for 15 years already. Nobody said a word about it. And this is the kind of complicity which the left, the progressives, the liberals have been, in my opinion, allowed to get away with by us. And it's our responsibility to stop that. Now, that's all I have to say, except to conclude with the following thought, that if in all of this you find that it's not concrete enough to talk about the idea of Palestine, then let me remind you that the idea of Palestine today, as I said earlier, is carried in the blood, in the bones, in the actual being on the ground there, everywhere where there are Palestinians, and everywhere, and we mustn't, I mean, the important thing is not to limit the idea of Palestine simply to the Palestinians, because the power of the idea is that it has gathered us together, who are not all Palestinians, who are Armenians, Jews, Americans of all kinds and all backgrounds from all over the world, and who see in the idea of Palestine, as I said, this wedge, who see in the idea of Palestine a wedge that opens up for real discussion and, above all, political action in this country where, as I say, things lag behind the rest of the world. The opportunity now stands before us, I believe, to use the idea of Palestine and not worry about convincing Reagan. I mean, that's just a waste of time. The real point about the idea of Palestine is that it is an international yet national struggle embodied in very specific acts of resistance and heroism on the land of Palestine and everywhere where there are struggles against injustice. And so let us resolve then to carry forward the struggle in our own places, wherever there are struggles against injustice, to carry forward this idea and to always link it to things, to affiliate it with things that have hitherto been simply swept under the carpet and forgotten about. Because in the end, as I say, the idea of Palestine is what mobilizes and has mobilized a whole population of 4 million dispersed Palestinians, a humble, perhaps not extraordinary people, but a people who believes that they are entitled to self-determination and will continue to fight for self-determination. So we need your support.